Breaking news, Pennsylvania court extends the mail-in ballot deadline until 3 days after Election Day. We'll talk about that and more today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, a lot of people are talking about mail-in voting, different from absentee ballots. Absentee ballots in most states, I mean, you're needing to request now or should have already requested, and then you'll receive it, and the Postal Service is saying you'll get those out as quickly as possible. That's bipartisan, by the way. Both parties are saying that. Get your ballot. Make sure if you're doing an absentee, follow the rules. I will tell you this, too. As someone who has been involved in a lot of campaigns and has had to vote absentee twice before on a presidential election, so not in all of them that I voted in, but a couple times, you really do have to look at the rules in your state. I mean, what color ink? What needs to be signed? If you mark, there's sometimes where there's like a row, and if you mark like two boxes in that row, that's it. It's your ballot has been tossed, you know, if you make any errors. So you have those issues that you want to take seriously. So for those of you who are doing absentee voting, and there's the rules are different in every state, but the sooner the better there. Pennsylvania's court, though, has come out with an opinion, the state's highest court, that has extended the state's mail ballot deadline. This means when your ballot has to be stamped by the Postal Service, not by just you, but you know, when does it go through the Postal Service? Until November 6th, so this year, that's 3 days after the election, at 5 p.m. So, in effect, has extended Election Day for three more days, three additional days that it could go through the post, and it has to be postmarked then. Here's what's key. That's not what date you marked on it. That's what date the Postal Service marks on it. And they also put in this opinion that if they can't read it, they're going to assume it met the deadline. So on top of extending the voting day 3 days, they have also included a provision that says if it's illegible, the postmark is illegible, the date can't be figured out. Does it add a 3? Is that an 8? You know, what is the date here? They'll assume it meets the deadline. So again, expanding the potential for fraud. And we're seeing across the country, again, there are windows. I want to make this clear. For those who serve overseas, our men and women who serve overseas, there are special exceptions for them and their ballots. And oftentimes, most of the time, these ballots are not counted on Election Day. They do a total of how many ballots do we have? What was the outcome in our state? Could they possibly change the outcome of our electoral votes? And would those outcome of those electoral votes impact who is president of the United States? Obviously, they can impact lots of state races and local races, so they do get counted. But as you can imagine, they do not all get counted necessarily on Election Day in every state. In some states, they have to because the margins are always so close. And so they're going... But in Pennsylvania, that means what? I'm assuming this is a big state, big population, that there could be so many outstanding possible legal ballots that they can't really tell us much about the election results until after Friday at 5 o'clock, because there could be enough votes outstanding easily in a state the size of Pennsylvania that would change not just local elections or congressional races or House races or Senate, U.S. Senate races or gubernatorial races, but it could change the outcome of the Electoral College and who gets the electoral votes. So you could have, again, you are setting up a delayed election in swing states, in states you know are key. Pennsylvania is one Donald Trump flipped. If he does it again, that's huge for a Republican candidate. It almost signifies on election night, which I think is also what they're trying to do. If you win Pennsylvania on election night, that comes in fairly early, it's East Coast. They don't want you to be able to win Pennsylvania on election night. They don't want that narrative going out while people might still be in line in places like on the West Coast, in Arizona. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Rick Rennell also joining us today on the broadcast.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Recast this for you. We're going to take your phone calls on this, 1-800-684-3110. Also, Rick Rennell, ACLJ Special Advisor for National Security and Foreign Policy, and a former Acting Director of National Intelligence and U.S. Ambassador to Germany, will be joining us in the second half hour of the broadcast. And by the way, he will take your phone calls as well. We've gotten into some deep discussions. There's a lot been going on, but you can also ask questions for him. Now, if you have a question for him, let our call screeners know that, and so we can note that for you and not take your call before and also keep you on. But he's got a new piece up. It's up now at aclj.org. It's called President Trump's Style is Working and Why That's Infuriating Washington, D.C. and Infuriating the Left. That is by Rick Rennell. It's up at aclj.org. We'll talk about his new piece as well when he joins us in the second half hour of the broadcast. So we have a Pennsylvania court. Now this is, Pennsylvania has been a top swing state for as long as I've been involved in politics and campaigns, but it has been a state that Republicans could not flip. They would spend a lot of money there. It was worth it for both sides, had to campaign heavily there. In Pennsylvania, which some people see as, how could that even be possibly Republican? You do have, you of course, you've got your Philadelphia and Pittsburgh kind of hotbeds of where the left gets their votes, but the rest of the state we kind of call the T of the state in Pennsylvania. So when you go up and then kind of east and then west, very conservative. It looks much more like the Midwest. It looks much more like not like what you think of Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, where you've got, like, in Philadelphia, of course, heavy African-American vote that's been strongly Democratic. And you've got then and a big labor vote. And then Pittsburgh, a huge labor vote. So how do Republicans flip that? Well, you've got to appeal to those labor voters, some of those African-American voters. Donald Trump was the kind of candidate that did that. And so when he took that from Democrats on election night, you could basically call the election right then. It was over for Hillary Clinton when he took a Pennsylvania. So now what they figured out is a way, and this was a lawsuit brought by the Democrat Party of Pennsylvania. So this is partisan. They've extended, this is not just absentee ballots. These are mail ballots. They've already got that going there. But the mail-in ballots, as long as they're postmarked 3 days after the election, 3 days after the election. Our election day is November 6th.
No, received after the election. No. They have to be
postmarked. They can be postmarked.
Okay, Will, please. What's the
postmarked the day of the election.
They have to be received
by 8 p.m., but received after.
Yeah, so yes. Received. Yeah. That means when they actually got, the Postal Service actually got them.
Yeah.
When they actually got to the Board of Elections. And you're talking, again, folks, 3 days. What will that mean on election night?
You've extended them.
Yes, they have drop-offs.
Now, you have to deliver those, I take it, the day of the election. But it just creates
It creates the idea that, one, you will not get results in a critical state, and you won't have that kind of early momentum that each campaign is looking for. And by the way, where does that tell you about campaigns? Where does that tell you about where the Democrat Party thinks Pennsylvania is going? By the way, they think, A, they've got to extend all these deadlines as much as possible. So where, you know, they can be postmarked on election day, but they're not actually received, which I don't even totally understand what process, what are they so concerned about that if they put the boxes out to take in the ballots, why aren't they ready to pick up the boxes on election day, you know, by 8 p.m. on election day or whenever the polls close there?
Exactly.
That night.
But
we know those votes don't usually get counted that day.
But there's something else that you said earlier about the not clear on the dates, and this is what you were talking about. The court also wrote, now this is the court wrote, not the legislative decisions,
no,
not what is required under the law. The court wrote that ballots received within this period that lack a postmark or other proof of mailing or for which the postmark or other proof of mailing is illegible will be presumed to have been mailed by election day unless a preponderance of the evidence, Andy, demonstrates that it was mailed after election day. So that was going to
be a very high bar for Republicans to come in and challenge.
How in the world are you going to be able to make that presumption by a presumption of the evidence? How are you going to be able to come to the conclusion that the ballot was mailed by election day? What is the proof that you would use in court to prove that? There's no way that you can do that. You would have to go back to that person, and you would have to examine that person, depose that person under oath, and make a determination
on each person.
On each person, on an individual basis.
They want election chaos.
Yeah.
What they don't want, they don't
exactly
want is, so if they can get this in a few other states, where you basically, these are large enough states where you could imagine a scenario where Donald Trump is winning, but there are so many of these outstanding mail-in, whatever you want to call these ballots, that it, you know, like Donald Trump or not, you can't make the call. It's just not right to do because under these new rules, way too many outstanding potential votes that could have the potential to flip not just local races, but the electoral votes go. And that means you don't get Pennsylvania called
fights
on election night. Very tough to call the entire election.
Well,
it's so many electoral votes.
You probably could.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for either candidate to get to 270.
So here's the great conflict. And Thane, I know this is something that's going on in the kind of the Washington thought processes. You could have a situation, Jordan, where you have dueling electors, where it's too close to call. The Secretary of State can't certify. You've got a Republican slate and a Democratic slate. And they say, you know what? We're going to just turn it over to the legislature, Pennsylvania controlled by the Democrats, and let them decide. And that then could become then, you know, because ultimately this thing could go to the House of Representatives, Congress.
Absolutely. It's happened twice before in United States history. It could happen. Look, I'm with Jordan on the outcome in Pennsylvania not being able to be determined on election night if these are the rules. It's going to be so close. And I think the other thing here, Jay, Jordan mentioned Arizona. If Donald Trump does win Pennsylvania, the Democrats will be desperate to keep it before being called from him before Arizona closes, because that's another swing state. But after all of that dust settles, the thing to me that bothers me the most about this, Jay, is actually something that the majority wrote in this opinion. They said the legislature enacted an extremely condensed timeline and the court didn't like that. Guess what? So what? That's the legislature's job, and it doesn't really matter what the court thinks about that, because it is the legislature's job to enact that timeline. To me, Jay, they gave away the game when they wrote that. The legislature enacted it. It should stand.
Pennsylvania has 7.4% of the electoral votes you need to win the presidential election, almost 10%.
So they picked Pennsylvania
and,
on purpose.
At 538 at the blog, you know, with Nate Silver,
yeah,
Pennsylvania, the most important state in 2020.
Okay. So they
this
picked,
all comes together.
Yeah.
And the
they,
Democrat Party's filed this lawsuit, not a outside voting group. Literally, it's the Democrat Party of Pennsylvania.
So they pick the most, one of the most important, the top two states.
Yeah.
I think Pennsylvania
because
and Florida.
Because of what Thane said, it can come in late, but early enough to where it starts impacting
the West.
Yeah.
So, Arizona.
Yep.
So they, Andy, intentionally pick Pennsylvania as the state to launch this postmark date balloting. In other words, ballots received after the election date, which you allow for the military because there's a reason they're in foreign military bases, but not for people that live in Pennsylvania. And that's not what the law said. But they intentionally pick that because Pennsylvania not only is a key state, as Jordan said, for electoral votes, but a early call on that or no call on that could affect states like Arizona, Colorado. They're coming in later.
Nevada, other states as well. Yeah, it was obviously a target by the Democratic Party to see if they could swing the election by calling a state or not calling a state or creating chaos in a state, which is what's going to happen in Pennsylvania. I predict there's going to be the chaos in Pennsylvania that we saw in Florida during the Gore-Bush situation. This is we have an election day in the United States. We don't have an election week in the United States. And that's what this has become, Jay and Jordan. This has become election week. Come one, come all. File your ballots whenever you want to, and then come back and then try to, for someone who challenged the ballot to prove that it was not filed on election day, because the Supreme Court on its own has made a presumption that unless you can show by a preponderance of the evidence, we will presume that it was filed by 5 o'clock on the day of the election. I mean, How can you make that presumption? How can you prove that evidence?
When you look at the Electoral College by state, there's only a handful of states like Pennsylvania which have 20 plus electoral college votes. It's Pennsylvania and Illinois, Florida, Texas, California, New York. Okay, so now we know New York and California, toss those aside. That's going Democrat. You could put that in the Joe Biden column, likely, though some people have talked about New York potentially flipping, and there's been so much change in where people live. There's been questions about that, too. There's been such migrations that have happened because of COVID restrictions. Also, migrations have happened because of the rioting, this, that. Maybe you don't just throw those in the Democrat column. But then, I mean, Pennsylvania, you know. Even, you know, Romney lost Pennsylvania by like 1.2%. George W. Bush lost it by 2.1%. Tight. You know, I think Trump carried it by 2.5. It's going to be very close there. But it's usually close enough where you can call it, and that kind of can end the night on election night.
I think. Look, this is they pick. They're gonna target. They're not gonna target 50 states.
No, we don't need to target
something. It's gonna be Pennsylvania. It may be Ohio. It's already been Wisconsin.
Minnesota,
it's gonna be Minnesota. It will be something in Arizona. There will be something in Nevada. There will be a big issue in Florida. Mark my words. That's what's gonna happen here. And you just gotta make sure that they don't steal the election the day after the election.
You're right.
Because I think the real fight on this, there's fights now, but the real fight is going to be November 4th.
Rick Grinnell.
Yeah.
Rick Grinnell, our special advisor for national security and foreign policy, is joining us now after this break. So you got questions for Rick? Get in your call now, 1-800-684-3110. Let our call screener know that as well. He will be joining us the next segment of the broadcast. Got a new piece up at ACLJ.org. President Trump's style is working. Oh, that upsets Washington, D.C. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Our special advisor, Rick Rennell, has been on the road a lot the past few weeks. He is a special advisor for us at National Security and Foreign Policy. He's got a new piece up at aclj.org. I'll tweet that right after the broadcast. President Trump's style is working. We talked about this some earlier in the week with Rick, that just the style of leadership, the peace deals, don't let those go by the way. So, you know, a lot happens. With last time we just talked to Rick, even how much happens. By the way, it's also Rick's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday to Rick! And you look like you're on the road again, which is kind of your life right now.
It's crazy. Every time I see the president, he says, "You are traveling and you're on the road, right?" Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I got the same. I was there just a couple days ago for meetings with the president, and it was same kind of thing, but mostly mine's focusing on cases, not so much the campaign. But you raised something, and I said this to the president. It's no secret that his style, and you really do a great job of laying this out, is so different than what Washington has been used to. And then you see the success with the Middle East being literally restructured before our eyes. I mean, completely restructured before our eyes. It's not a Washington style of leadership. It's a businessman style of leader. It's very transactional in that regard. But you think that's the reason that the success is happening?
Yeah. You know, there's so many people that I hear all the time in Washington that will complain about President Trump's style or say that they don't like it. And I always take the bait whenever I hear that. I say, well, OK, let's talk about the style. And I think everybody in your discussion circles, when somebody brings up the president's tweets or style, you should go in for the kill immediately and just say, let's debate it. Let's talk about style, because style is a tactic of getting to a goal. And so we have to evaluate Joe Biden's style versus Donald Trump's style versus Barack Obama's style versus George W. Bush's style. Let's look at what style works. And I think Washington has been trapped in this status quo style question for so long. I love the question that even the other night President Trump got, which was, why don't you act more presidential? That's such a Washington definition of what a president means, because the rest of America doesn't really like the Washington style. So let's debate it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know, Jordan, you got a question, but, you know, when they throw that presidential thing out, I go back and think to myself, well, you know, Jimmy Carter acted, I guess, presidential, but the Middle East, even with the Camp David Accords, ends up being a mess. And we have hostages in Iran we can't get out. You know, I could go through the list. They act presidential. What does that even mean to getting things done? Okay.
I'll tell you what acting presidential means. It means in the campaign as a candidate, you promise to move the embassy to Jerusalem. And then as president, you have to be like, no, I can't do that.
Right. That's presidential. Yeah. Instead of, I promised it and I did it. Go ahead, Jordan.
Being controlled by, this is just, this is how I talk to people, Rick, because this calls every time I'm out with a group and they know what I do. And I'm sure this happens more even with you, but they say, you know, I just wish he wouldn't tweet this or wouldn't tweet that. I said, you know, my line is always this. I'm just thankful I have a president where I know where his mind is. Like, I know what he's thinking. I know where he wants to be. He's not hiding the buck. He's not hiding the buck, and that is most politicians on both sides of the aisle, you cannot read, even in person. They will smile at you. They will shake your hand. You could come out of there thinking you've got a deal, and they could do that all day to both sides of the issue, to everybody, and no deal would come out. And I think that's what people have gotten used to, this kind of this slick, shake your hand, you have no idea where they are, don't ever tell you what's wrong or right, don't ever say yes or no. And so you kind of have to play a guessing game on where their policy is actually going to fall down.
Or you have to hire a lobbyist in order to understand what they're really saying. Look, I've been around Washington long enough to know that there is this whole, you know, there's been this whole push from the media for a very long time to say, we want to know more. We want politicians to be transparent. We want to know what you're thinking before you issue a press release about the decision. And that's been the mantra for about 10 or 15 years. And I think the reality is that reporters have that now in this president. They see his thinking, they see his process, and now they're complaining about it. So to me, it just goes to show that whatever Washington is asking for, whatever this kind of bureaucratic politician reporter fields, collectively what they want is really not what the American people want.
It seems to me, I mean, Dad, listen, we've all spent a lot of time with the president, all three of us that are talking right now. This is someone,
person that's a guest
this is someone who lays it out on the table. He lays it
very
out
clearly.
And he also kind of lays a lot of things out of the table. Like Rick said, he uses it even like through the tweets.
Yeah.
It's his thinking. It's not the final decision.
No, it's how he processes.
It's kind of how he's processing through.
Yes.
And if people aren't used to that, they're used to just this kind of gift-wrapped final package.
Here's what they're used to.
I feel like this election is, they're trying to run this off of, wouldn't you rather have the old man who just reads the teleprompter? That's what they're kind of saying to the American voter.
That is, well, here's the thing. You know what they're used to, Rick? You get a nice binder. It's got that nice presidential seal on it. You open it up. There's your position paper. And then you say it. Yeah. Instead, we've got a guy. We got a guy that just says it. Thinks about
or
it.
Or says, I don't
it.
Like this.
Or says, I don't like what's in the position paper. Go ahead.
Let's dig deep on that because, Jay, you're exactly right. That's what they want. And what that means, that little nice binder with the seal on it, what that represents and what that means is the power of the bureaucracy. That the deputy assistant secretary of this and that and the assistant secretary and the principal deputy assistant secretary gets to formulate everything into that binder. And so what President Trump has done and what he does in the Oval Office constantly is take away the power of the bureaucracy to decide. And he decides and he tries to say, well, now go do it. And so I like it a lot, actually. I think that his thinking, although it completely upsets Washington and they're going to attack him for being whatever unpresidential means, he is so focused on what the American people want. And I just hope that our listeners really understand that when he's in the Oval Office with, you know, multimillionaire executives, he's constantly pushing them to say, you know, how does this decision affect the bottom line for the Americans? He really is focused on that. I've seen it over and over, and it's really refreshing.
It is. It really is.
And in the piece up, you've also got this piece. We got about a minute and a half left with you, Rick, today. And so we got this piece up. We want people to share it. We'll all tweet it out. I know you'll retweet it as well. It's on this so that, because I think what important thing, because when you're talking to our audience, you're talking to a lot of people, Rick, that are getting those questions. And they are probably sometimes, maybe depending on where they got the question at work, whether they get the question at church, whether they get the question even at home from their loved ones and family, is how do I engage these discussions? And it's going to be, you know, an overload of those discussions from now until Election Day.
Look, I think just take, for instance, having a conversation with your family. You expect your family and you expect those that you love to be really honest with you. You don't always expect them to say everything that you're comfortable with. But I would much rather have a close relationship with a family member or a politician that represents me being totally honest and transparent rather than packaged and really making it so that I don't quite know what they actually think.
You know, folks, check out Rick's new piece, President Trump's Style is Working. He's a special advisor for the ACLJ on national security and foreign policy. Rick, happy birthday. Thanks for joining us today. Folks, when we come back on the broadcast, we'll start taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. This Election Day extension that we're seeing by courts. That Election Day is now 3 days longer in Pennsylvania, depending on where you put your ballot. And by the way, drop-off ballots. And then the bar set for legal challenges to each ballot is again, like Andy said, you're going to bring haul people in and make them testify under oath about their ballot. Do the people even exist? Try to find them. We'll talk about second half hour. Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.